Chapter 2. The Boy. The light was starting to fade and Helena was cranking up the pace yet again. "Come on," she shouted, pressing ahead from the others. "We need to make it while there's still light." Toby was lagging behind at the back of the group, almost at risk of being dropped entirely. Lucy hung back until he drew level with her. "Here," she said, handing him one of her two remaining cereal bars. "You can make it through this, all right?" He looked at her pathetically. She took the bar back off him and ripped it open. "Eat," she ordered, stuffing the snack back into his hands and watching until he pressed the bar to his mouth. The sugar quickly stimulated his appetite, and instinct did the rest. Within moments, the bar was gone.
"Thank you,"
he said quietly as they continued after the others.
"When did you first learn to shoot?"
Lucy looked at him, taken aback.
"You drew your gun earlier, so I'm guessing you know how to use one and weren't just deciding that was the time to vote Republican," he added.
She laughed. "My dad taught me when I was growing up. I actually learned on a shotgun first."
"For real? That's unusual."
"My dad was unusual," replied Lucy with a chuckle. "He'd line up his beer bottles out in the field and say, 'You get a dollar for every one you hit.'"
"You must have been one rich kid if you were doing it with a shotgun," noted Toby.
"Yeah, a rich kid with a broken collarbone," Lucy snorted. "But now you mention it, I did get good pretty quickly. So my dad stopped giving me money and made me switch to a pistol until I got that too. Then he stopped giving me pocket money altogether and put me to work on the ranch. Checking the cattle sites, cutting hay, repairing fences, you name it, I did it." Toby laughed and then looked at Lucy's face.
"Oh, you're serious."
"I was 14 by this point. It wasn't that bad. It's not like I did it all on my own. He would supervise me, or one of the other farm workers would."
"Yeah, but still, 14. Was that even legal?"
fretted Toby. Lucy shrugged. "He called it a rounded education. He was kind of right. I still went to school, obviously," she added, sensing the look of concern in Toby's eyes. "This was just on the long summers."
"So you can ride a horse, then?"
pressed Toby. "Haven't ridden in over a decade, but I'm sure I could pick it up again. It's the sort of skill that stays with you. Or at least I hope it is. Otherwise, I really did waste my youth. How about you?"
"Me? No way. Horses scare me. Big creatures,"
said Toby, shaking his head. "Horses scare you?" laughed Lucy. "Then those wolf bison things last night must have been..." Toby smiled politely, but didn't laugh. Lucy immediately regretted her flippancy. "Sorry, that was..."
"You don't have to apologize," he replied calmly. "Everyone deals with grief differently."
Lucy nodded and the two walked in silence for a minute. "I had to shoot a coyote once," said Lucy, restarting the conversation.
"When?"
said Toby, his eyebrows raised. 2 days after my 16th birthday. That was pretty scary. I had to shoot one of the cows, too. It was chewed up pretty badly. Only happened this one time, though. Most of the time, it was skunks and the like. You don't want them getting near your herd. How about you? Ever shot anything?"
"Me?" said Toby, raising his eyebrows. "Oh, goodness, no. I've never fired one of those outside of a shooting range."
"What made you get one?" inquired Lucy.
"It's a Republican thing," replied Toby. "You never know when someone's gonna come at you," he added with a chuckle.
As they wound around another long tree-lined bend, a small town glimmered into view less than a mile down the tracks. Nestled between the surrounding mountains, the town stretched out across what flat land there was. Candles shone out to them, dotted sporadically across a handful of dwellings, signs of life in the otherwise barren expanse. The group's shadows continued to grow longer, stretching further ahead of them along the tracks. Time was short. "Welcome to Fraser, Colorado," read the train station sign as they stepped off the tracks and onto the concrete platform.
"Halla-fucking-luia,"
said Josh, voicing the group's collective thoughts as he abandoned the rails. As they walked through the deserted ticket hall,
Helena grabbed local maps from the tourist information racks. Meanwhile, Toby, to everyone's surprise, smashed open the defunct vending machine. He didn't speak as he raided the machine's contents, but moved away after taking an armful, allowing the rest of the group to do the same. "This way," declared Helena, leading them out of the lobby, map outstretched before her. From what Lucy could see, it was a small town, with maybe enough houses for a couple of thousand people. If as many of them had died here as in San Francisco, there were probably only a few hundred people left. This correlated with the signs of desertion that met her eyes, save for the sporadic candles flickering in isolated houses. Kristen jogged ahead and banged on the door of the first illuminated house they came to, but no one answered. They shouted a few times until a curtain was hastily drawn across the upstairs window and the candle extinguished. The last of the daylight disappeared behind the mountains and forest that framed the town. Only the deep purple of twilight remained as the last of the group's time ran out. "Flashlights, quickly," said Helena authoritatively. Everyone brought out the flashlights they'd either pre-packed or had found among the train wreckage. Lucy had the lieutenant's. The group turned onto the main street, passing first an abandoned diner, then a convenience store, both of which had been smashed in. No one had boarded them up, which didn't bode well for the fate of the owners, Lucy noted. Next to the store was the community fire station. Its single fire truck stood locked away behind the sliding doors. A figure sprinted across the street up ahead. "Hey!" yelled Helena, her voice swiftly joined by the others' calls for help as the group tried in vain to get the lone individual's attention. They broke into a run, but the figure was too far ahead and vanished down a side alley. "Come on, not far now," urged Helena, resuming their course. "The town hall is our best chance of shelter." As they made their way forwards, Lucy found that the group had naturally begun to huddle since the light failed. Their collective flashlights provided snapshots of illumination in a roughly 20-yard radius. The further into town they got, the more pronounced the signs of disaster became. Abandoned cars stood crashed along the side streets, while uncollected trash lay piled up on the roads. Discarded breathing masks lined the sidewalks. Lucy's eyes tracked along the sidewalk further, and she began to notice small piles and bundles all around them, some larger than others. "Guys," she said, suddenly realizing what she was looking at. She shone her flashlight onto a pile and walked closer. The others followed, training their lights on it too, bringing the heap into sharp focus. "Clothes," said Lucy, shining her flashlight along to another nearby pile. Josh took out his phone and began taking photos with one hand, using his other to point his light at the target. "We don't have time for that," said Helena, casting her eyes around the darkness nervously. "We have to document everything," argued Josh. "It's the only way we'll beat them." "Oh, Jesus," came Kristen's voice from behind. The group spun around and followed the direction of her flashlight, which pointed to two abandoned police patrol cars. The more distant vehicle had been abandoned mid-lane, both of its passenger doors open. The nearer car had partially mounted the sidewalk at an angle. Leading away from the open driver's door was a crumpled heap, an officer's uniform. Cautiously, the group edged forwards, their beams illuminating more of the car as they approached. The clothes glistened in the flashlights. "They're still wet," said Josh, reaching for his phone again. "The passenger seat's wet, too, and there's another uniform in there," said Kristen. Lucy's eyes clocked several bullet casings on the ground, surrounded by beads of water. A long howl pierced the darkness, reverberating through the street. "We need to find shelter right now," cried Helena. The howl repeated, this time joined by more howls coming from a different direction. "The church," cried Toby, pointing up ahead, his flashlight stretching just far enough to reveal the outline of a white wooden church a few hundred yards away with open doors. As they ran towards the church, their flashlights sent streaks of light across the road and the buildings. Lucy's arms pumped, driving her legs forwards, desperately combating the weight of her backpack. A car screeched around the corner out of nowhere, and in that moment, Lucy saw death itself. There they were, in all their supernatural splendor, hunting down the fleeing car. These were the vast, abominable beasts that had obliterated the evacuation train. They'd outpaced centuries of human engineering and overpowered heavily armed human soldiers. They were here, and they were real. Their black fur glistened in the flashlight. Deep, guttural snarls mixed with the car's straining engine. The panicked driver had a wispy mustache and rounded glasses. The terrified, middle-aged woman next to him, presumably his wife, braced herself against the door as they turned. As the car skidded out in front of the church, it turned side-on to the creatures. The foremost animal leapt with a roar, landing upon the roof of the vehicle, punching an impression of its body into the crumpling metalwork. The driver slammed on the brakes, throwing the beast onto the ground. The creature rolled onto all fours and turned, snarling. The headlights vividly illuminated its features for the first time as it bared its razor-like teeth to the car. Ivory tips protruded from each shoulder blade, mirroring the claws on the ends of its long, muscular limbs. The driver slammed the accelerator and rammed the beast before it could pounce. But the creature's body immediately wedged under the bumper, stalling the car in its tracks. As the driver frantically tried to reverse, his door window shattered inwards, showering the occupants with glass. A second beast was now leading the attack. Two powerful black forearms thrust through the broken window frame and clamped onto the man's skull. The beast planted its legs vertically against the car like a climber and wrenched the screaming man from his seat. Both beast and man disappeared from view as they rolled to the ground, falling away from the car's main beams. Through the darkness, the man's screams painted his fate. The female passenger burst out of the opposite side of the car, but was felled instantly by a third beast. Its vast jaws sank deep into her collarbone, crushing it, spilling all the life from her shuddering body. She lay dying in plain view of the headlights, obstructed only by the predator ravaging her. The horrified bystanders reeled as a fourth beast arrived at the scene. The creature pounced onto the crumpled roof of the car and surveyed the scenes below, quickly turning its eyes on Lucy and the other four humans who stood just a few hundred yards away. "Run!" yelled Josh, the first to awaken from their collective stupor. The group turned on its heels and began to flee. Before they knew what was happening, they'd split in three directions. Lucy and Josh fled down a side street on the left. Toby was nowhere to be seen. Lucy snatched a glimpse of Kristen and Helena disappearing the opposite way to the right as one of the beasts bounded after them with a roar. Lucy and Josh kept running, adrenaline surging through their bodies. "Here!" yelled Lucy, peeling off down the first street on the left. It was a wide suburban road lined with houses and parked cars. Josh spun on his feet and doubled back after her, following Lucy onto the lawn of a detached house and immediately down the steps to the basement. From the small secluded porch in front of the basement door, they peered out above the grass line, trying to control the volume of their sharp, heavy breathing. Lucy turned and tried the door, but it was locked. Josh kicked it hard several times, to no avail. "Stand back," ordered Lucy, drawing the lieutenant's gun and pointing it at the lock. She pulled the trigger. The noise of the gunshot reverberated around the neighborhood as the lock fragmented. They rushed inside and slammed the door. Darkness. They'd dropped their flashlights on the way, so Josh pulled out his phone. The minimal light from the lock screen illuminated his hands and a little of his face as he fumbled, trying to activate the flashlight setting. A beam of light shot out from the back as his fingers found the right buttons. "We need to barricade the door," whispered Lucy. "Grab this," hissed Josh, sticking the phone in his teeth, the beam shining down onto his hands as they took hold of a work table. Lucy felt her way to the far end of the table and lifted, the two of them shuffling the heavy thing all the way up against the door. Lucy took a step back. Her heel hit something cold and hard, which tipped over with a clatter. Josh spun around and illuminated the paint tin, which rolled loudly across the garage floor until it met the far wall. Something shuffled in the darkness. Lucy trained her gun in the direction of the sound as Josh cast the light all around until it landed on the source. A child cowered in the corner, shielding its eyes from the glare. The child was filthy. His hair was greasy and matted, his clothes covered in dirt and food stains. Lucy approached slowly and tried to sound reassuring. Hey, don't worry. We're not going to hurt you, she said, but the boy only recoiled further among the piles of cardboard boxes. Josh, he can't see what we look like. Shine the flashlight on us, said Lucy. Josh obeyed and illuminated his own countenance, revealing beads of sweat covering his pale forehead. Lucy made her way towards the child as Josh turned the light on her. Lucy, said Josh, with dread in his voice. What? She said, freezing. Your leg, said Josh. It's bleeding. She looked down at her leg, and for a moment time stopped. Blood trailed from her calf, leaking out of a cut that had torn through both her jeans and her skin. Josh turned his light to the floor and to the trail of blood leading from Lucy. He traced it all the way back to the barricaded door. Josh backed up towards Lucy and the boy. Turning his back to them, he kept his light pointed at the doorway. Seal it, quickly, Josh hissed over his shoulder, not looking around. With what? Cried Lucy. The first aid kit was in the bags, and I can't do anything here without light. Ask the kid, urged Josh. Lucy turned back to the child, his slender outline barely visible in the light, reflecting off the basement door. Please, do you have any other bandages down here, or some cloth, or another flashlight? The quivering child only shrank further into the pile of cardboard. Lucy spotted a white rag hanging over the top of one of the boxes and snatched it, tearing it in half. Josh, can I get a little light over here? She whispered, struggling in the darkness. He didn't move. Please, she implored. Josh yielded and swung the light around, training it on her leg. Hurry, he insisted. Lucy grabbed the first half of the rag and dabbed away the excess blood. A lot had soaked into her jeans. She grabbed the second half of the rag and tied it around the wound tightly, stemming any further bleeding. The door rattled violently in its frame, shaking the heavy table propped against it. The child yelped and burrowed further into the boxes. Josh spun around and trained the light at the door once again. Another great thud, louder this time, shaking the table further. A scratching sound came through the brick as the creature dragged its claws along the exterior of the basement. A screeching din took over as the claws reached the blacked-out windows. The screeching continued all the way along the window until the claws reached brick again. Then silence.
Get behind me, whispered Lucy.
Josh and the child huddled behind her, Josh's light directed over her shoulder at the blacked-out window. Lucy's gun trained on it, too. Wood splinters flew through the air as the beast crashed through the door and reared up onto its hind legs. Lucy stumbled backwards and tripped, falling to the ground. The child screamed as Josh illuminated the creature. Lucy let off four rounds directly at its chest. The beast roared in pain, lashing out and knocking Josh to the floor. Josh's phone landed beside him, its flashlight shining upwards to reveal the beast's teeth sinking into his head. Lucy glimpsed the creature's internal organs through the wide, gill-like structures lining its ribcage. She fired three more rounds directly at them, sending the beast crashing to the ground. Scrambling to her feet, Lucy grabbed Josh's phone and shone it over him. He was gone. His skull had been crushed by the dead creature beside him. Noise from outside interrupted Lucy's transfixion. The rhythmic falling of four heavy legs in sequence signaled the fast approach of the next pack member. Lucy spun around, watching as the child disappeared through an interior door into the house. She raced after him, calling out as she followed his path up a flight of stairs. As she reached the hallway, she saw the kid up ahead. He had a small action hero backpack on and was unlocking the front door.
No, don't do that!
Cried Lucy, chasing after him as fast as she could, her feet sliding across the wet hallway as she ran. It was too late. The child was already through the front door. Lucy raced after him, leaping down the front steps and grabbing the kid as he ran out onto the street. She turned on the spot as an engine roar came from the left. Lucy grabbed the kid by his arm and ran towards the oncoming vehicle, desperately waving it down. The car braked heavily, coming to a stop a few dozen yards ahead. As they hurried towards it, an unseen hand pushed the front passenger door open from within. Lucy leapt into the car, pulling the child onto her lap and slamming the door, hitting the lock. She turned to discover their rescuer. Toby slammed the car into gear, accelerating rapidly.
They quickly regained top speed on the long straight road leading out of the town, and they raced into the darkness.
Thank you. Thank you, Toby,
breathed Lucy, gasping to catch her breath, the child nestled under her chin. Only now did Lucy notice the blood across Toby's face and the small puncture mark below his ear. The boy wrestled Lucy's arms off of him and climbed into the back where he hid in the foot cavity behind the driver's seat.
Who's that?
Asked Toby, keeping his eyes on the road as he floored it away from Fraser.
Toby, you're hurt.
No shit,
he said, keeping his eyes on the road.
Do you know where the others are?
Josh is dead. I don't know what happened to the others. I thought you went the same way as them.
We got split up, replied Toby. But I think they're dead too.
Where did you get the car? Asked Lucy.
You don't recognize it?
Lucy looked around, suddenly realizing the roof above them was partially caved in and the window on Toby's side was smashed.
I managed to hide in a store for a while, he said. The entrance had been kicked in. Then I doubled back to where we'd been. I figured I'd chance it that the beasts had moved on by then, which almost worked out.
He pointed to the puncture mark.
Does it hurt? Asked Lucy.
Yes.
Maybe I should drive, she suggested. Toby considered for a moment.
That's probably sensible, he agreed. I don't imagine I've got long left.
She looked at him, horrified that he was so ready to die.
You'll be all right, she insisted. You can make it, okay? Are you still bleeding, or is that someone else's?
The blood's mine, but it's clotted now, so I'm done bleeding, replied Toby.
Okay, good.
Not so much. A wound this size shouldn't clot like that. It should need dressing. If it's clotted, it means I'm probably going to clot elsewhere soon. Maybe whatever the creature injected me with was poisonous or something. I don't know.
His hand moved to the puncture mark below his ear and prodded it tentatively.
If I'm right, he said, I'll probably have a stroke soon, or my heart will fail. If I have a stroke, shoot me. If it's the second one, let it play out. Understood?
Lucy stared at him, open-mouthed.
I mean it, he insisted. Don't look at me like that. My wife died less than 24 hours ago, and I think my time's coming up pretty fast, too. I'm just telling you how I want to die. You owe me. I saved your lives.
Lucy nodded slowly and swallowed. Do you want to pull over so we can swap?
If we pull over, there's no telling what'll happen. Our best chance is to keep moving until daybreak.
He flicked on the cruise control.
Here, you take the wheel, then I'll climb out under you and you can get into the seat, all right?
Okay, said Lucy, not having much choice as Toby relinquished the wheel.
The car swerved a little as she took hold. Toby climbed into the back, avoiding the child in the footwell.
Good. Now you move over,
he instructed from the back. Carefully and with some unavoidable swerving, Lucy moved across into the driver's seat, wincing from the throbbing of her ribs. She adjusted the chair position so she could reach the pedals properly.
I might get some rest,
said Toby, climbing back up front and easing into the passenger seat.
I don't feel so great.
Lucy barely had time to read the road signs as they sped through the darkness. If she'd read the last one correctly, Denver wasn't far. The National Guard would be there. It was their nearest shot at finding safety. An hour had passed on the dashboard clock since she and Toby had switched places. As they rounded another mountainous bend, an orange glow appeared on the horizon. Lucy's mouth fell open in dismay as the burning city came into view. The blaze reflected off the clouds above, turning the whole sky blood orange. Great plumes of thick black smoke twisted upwards into the air. Two other cars sped past in the opposite direction, beeping as if in warning of what lay that way. But Lucy couldn't turn around. There was no safety behind her either. As they reached a fork in the road, she took the only option available and diverted south of the blaze. If she could circumnavigate the blaze of Denver, she could pick up the route to Kansas. It was further, but it was her next best chance if she wanted to reach D.C. Lucy had been driving for hours.
Her legs were cramped and her brain was exhausted from deciphering the endless shapes that flew in and out of the headlights as they drove through the country in search of sanctuary. She was freezing cold, too, owing to the broken window, and the temptation to ease the airflow or pull over to sleep was immense. But the skulking eyes of roadside animals that sporadically reflected in her headlights were a sufficient reminder of the perils of stopping. The faintest rays of gray sunlight began to ebb above the horizon as Lucy checked the fuel gauge a couple of hours later. They were low on gas, about to dip into the reserve line. She drove for another 40 minutes, anxiously watching the gauge begin to flatline, until up ahead, to her infinite mercy, a gas station appeared. It was deserted. No lights, no cars, no power. The pumps were never going to work. Lucy pulled into the forecourt and applied the handbrake. She looked into the back. The kid was asleep. She gave Toby a nudge. "Toby, we need gas." He murmured faintly but didn't open his eyes, burbling a little before rolling his head the other way and falling quiet again. He was deteriorating. Most of the color had drained from his face, and he was no longer coherent. She had to find help. She couldn't just put a bullet in his head, for Christ's sake. She stepped out of the car into the weak light of the morning and approached the pump, lifting it from its holster and opening the tank flap. She squeezed and waited, but nothing came out, obviously. It reminded her of her gun, though, and she quickly checked the weapon was still holstered, the safety in the off position before approaching the darkened store. The door was open, so she walked in, shining Josh's phone flashlight around the store for light. She climbed under the counter and looked around for the pump switch, but it was already on. Cursing her luck, she crawled back out from behind the till and surveyed the rest of the shop. Aha! Fuel cans. She grabbed as many of them as she could and returned to the car, tipping each one into the tank before returning to the store to get more. She repeated the actions until the supply was exhausted, then scavenged for anything else that might be useful. Seizing a state map, as Helena had done, along with a pen from behind the counter. Looking around the shop again, Lucy began to feel that something wasn't right. The shop had been left open, and yet nothing was missing. She moved behind the counter again. The key was still in the kiosk, and there was money in the drawer. But this time she noticed a slight padding underfoot. There was water beneath her feet. She hurried back to the car with an armful of the only food and drink available. The two passengers were still asleep, unaware of the danger that had visited the area. Lucy jumped in and raced the car away from the desolate station. Morning was in full flow by now, and aided by a stolen can of Red Bull, Lucy continued onwards. She balanced the map on the steering wheel and circled the gas station before tossing the map onto Toby's lap. When she reached for the map again an hour later, she brushed Toby's hand. His skin was cold and clammy, dotted with sticky, transparent beads. She gasped and slowed the car down. Toby was dead and in the first stages of decay. She stopped the car along the side of the road and walked around to the passenger seat. Leaning over Toby's body, she unbuckled him and, sliding a hand under each of his armpits, dragged his body from the car and lay it by the roadside. She looked at him for a moment and considered saying a prayer, but she didn't know if he'd been religious or not. Acutely aware of her blood-soaked jeans, she winced and undid Toby's belt buckle. "Forgive me," she muttered, as she maneuvered off his cargo pants, attempting to keep his underwear in place as she did so. His legs were beginning to glisten. Once the pants were off, she turned them inside out to allow the damp interior a chance of drying. She removed her torn, bloodied jeans and put on Toby's inverted cargo pants. They were much too long and loose around the hips. She folded the waistband over to expose the belt rings and tightened the belt to the smallest notch. "So sorry," she whispered, draping the discarded denim over his bare legs in an attempt to protect his modesty. She rolled up both cargo pant legs several times so they didn't drag along the ground, then returned to the car and drove away. It was afternoon by the time their stolen gas ran out. Toby's empty seat still bore a wet imprint of his figure. The car spluttered to a halt next to a field indistinguishable from the thousands of fields they'd passed already.
Lucy checked the rearview mirror. The child was awake and staring out of the window expressionlessly, clutching his backpack to his chest. Lucy stood by the car and anxiously surveyed the landscape, scouring for landmarks she could cross-reference against the map. The nearest town was around 7 miles away, give or take. Hiking at a child's pace, they were going to be pushed to make it by nightfall. She walked around to the rear of the car and opened the child's door. The boy recoiled slightly. He looked around 8 or 9. "We gotta walk from here," said Lucy. The child didn't react. "I'm Lucy. What's your name?" The boy said nothing, and Lucy lacked the energy to try harder. She'd already saved the kid's life, and they had a long distance to cover. Small talk could wait. She checked the car for anything they could take with them, but it was basically empty. She slung her minimal backpack over her shoulder. "Hey, can I see your bag?" asked Lucy. The boy stared at the road, resolutely avoiding eye contact. His backpack was tiny, enough room for maybe a kid's lunch and no more. Unless he was carrying a time machine, it was probably unlikely to revolutionize their situation, Lucy figured. "Fine, whatever. Come on," she said, setting off without looking back again. She could check his backpack later. He followed as she knew he would. They were hungry and thirsty, and between them had only the few snacks Lucy had been able to grab from the gas station. She'd been worried that the kid might slow her down. But unlike Lucy, the boy was well-rested, and as she entered her third day without sleep, the pair were evenly matched. After an hour or so, the child came to a complete halt in the middle of the road. "Hey, come on, look, we can't stay here. We've got to keep moving," urged Lucy, reaching out and taking his hand. But the boy shook her off and stayed put, his eyes cast downward, his legs shifting uncomfortably. "Listen to me," she said, kneeling down in front of the boy, trying to make eye contact. "I know this is tough. I get it. It's tough for me, too. And I know you miss your mom and your dad, but..." The ground around her knee began to warm. Lucy looked down at the dark patch of tar leading up to the child, whose pants were wet with fresh urine. "Oh," she said, standing up abruptly. She stepped back from the growing puddle. "I didn't know you... Go over there. I won't look. I swear." She turned the kid around to face the field and stepped back as he nervously pulled his pants down and finished pissing. There wasn't much left. Most of it was in his clothes now. Lucy wrapped her hands around her head and groaned. "Why didn't you..." Ugh. She closed her eyes and took a deep breath. Her ears started to pick out the wind rustling in the trees and some distant birds calling to one another. She rubbed her itching eyes several times and reopened them, blinking the blurry vision back into focus. "Hey, sorry, I got frustrated. It's okay. We all have accidents," she said, kneeling down again and beckoning the boy back over. "Between you and me, I'm feeling a little scared by what's going on. I'm actually feeling kind of alone because I lost my best friend in the whole world, so I could really use a friend right now. So look, here's the deal. I'm gonna make you a promise." She held out her pinky finger. "I promise that I'm gonna keep you safe and look out for you, for both of us. Will you help look out for me too? And we can be a team?" She kept her pinky finger outstretched, hoping above everything that it would work. Slowly, cautiously, the little boy raised his hand and stuck out his pinky finger, wrapping it around hers. For the first time, he looked into her eyes, albeit not for long. His eyes darted back to the ground again, but it was progress all the same. With that, they set off again, and after a mile or so, the boy took her hand. Together, they walked in silence. They walked for several hours more, during which time they had no choice but to stop and rest intermittently. The gas station snacks were a mixed blessing, giving them sugar highs, but compounding their dehydration and causing inevitable energy crashes. A small town eventually emerged along the road ahead, perhaps only a mile away now. This time, a lookout post made of scaffold stood by the first few houses marking the town boundary. At that moment, the boy's hand slipped from Lucy's. He collapsed onto the hard road.
"Hey!" cried Lucy, panicking, immediately falling to her knees to try to shake the boy awake. "Hey, kid, come on now! Come on, we're nearly there, wake up!"
His skin was ash white and clammy, and he was completely unresponsive. Lucy leapt to her feet and faced the watchtower, jumping, waving, and shouting desperately for help. One of the sentries spotted her and pointed, beckoning over a colleague who seemed to reach for a radio. Lucy turned her attention back to the nameless boy, shaking and calling to him to no avail. Then it dawned on her. The backpack. She wrestled it off of his unconscious body and tore the zipper open, revealing a black purse-shaped box. She prized it apart, staring down at the syringe and other unfamiliar devices that greeted her eyes. There was a note inside the pouch, too. Damien Brooks, type 1 diabetic. Emergency contact, Evelyn Brooks, 716-866-5269. Lucy fumbled around the rest of the bag for clues as to what the hell to do. She'd never treated a diabetic before, but she'd heard of diabetic comas, and this didn't look good. The rumble of a car approaching interrupted Lucy's frantic rummaging.
"Hey, you need help?"
yelled the driver, leaning out of the window. Lucy scooped the kid up in her arms and rushed toward the vehicle. The front passenger leapt out to assist. Together, they lowered the unconscious boy into the back seat.
"What's wrong with your son?"
asked the driver as Lucy hastily retrieved the boy's items from the road and climbed into the car.
"He's diabetic, and he's not my son," replied Lucy breathlessly. "I have no idea how to treat him."
The car spun around and headed back towards the town at speed.
"Tell Paul," instructed the driver.
The assistant reached for the radio.
"Base, this is Tower 2 Dispatch. Come in, over," he chimed.
"Go ahead, Dispatch 2.
We just picked up two strangers outside the tower. There's a diabetic child in urgent need of medical attention. We're taking him to the town hall now. Can you get Paul to meet us there ASAP? The kid's in a bad way. Over."
"Roger that, Dispatch 2. In a bit. Over."
The radio crackled out for the last time, and they crossed the threshold into the town, speeding past the manned sentry tower. Lucy's eyes darted between the pale child and the bizarre glimpses of the town she was getting as they drove. Stacks of household mirrors had been placed in a circle by the roadside, all facing inwards toward a large central plastic barrel. Further along, people were digging pits by the side of the road, some of which were lined with plastic. They passed a truck hauling fresh lumber, and Lucy glimpsed a second watchtower a little way off. The place reminded her of her own modest hometown of Clinton, only here was smaller, with even fewer amenities. The car came to an abrupt halt, and the driver and assistant leapt out, immediately reaching into the back and helping lift the child from Lucy. They rushed into the stone building ahead. Lucy snatched the backpack and hastened after them.
"Paul!"
yelled the driver, who was strong enough to carry the child himself. An unassuming man met them inside.
"Lay him down on the table, quickly," replied the man, presumably Paul. "Does he have a kit?"
"The woman's got it,"
said the assistant, pointing to Lucy, who thrust the black box forward. Paul snatched it from her.
"I'm gonna talk you through what I'm doing here, guys, so pay attention. You may have to do this sometime, you never know. ABC. Who can remember what that stands for?"
Airway, breathing, circulation.
"Good. So his airway is clear and he's breathing," said Paul, examining the boy. "Maddie, you want to check his circulation?"
Maddie, the driver's assistant, put his fingers to the boy's neck.
"He's got a pulse,"
he confirmed.
"Good,"
said Paul, double-checking the diagnosis.
"Now, we need to take a blood glucose reading. That'll tell us if he needs sugar or insulin."
Paul pulled out two objects from the kit, a small pebble-sized thing with an LED screen into which he fed a tiny strip of paper, and something that looked like a really thick pen.
"Crap, he's out of needles,"
fretted Paul, clicking the top of the pen thing.
"Rich, give me your knife, quickly."
Rich, the strong driver, obliged, handing over a pen knife. Lucy shifted uncertainly as Paul flicked open a blade and held the tip up to the unconscious child's finger.
"Whoa, what are you doing? Jesus, Paul, no blood. That's the rule,"
cried Maddie.
We need a drop of blood for the reader, asserted Paul. One drop, that's all, and we can stem it immediately.
Fuck!
Cried Maddie, spinning on the spot, running his hands through his hair. This is why we don't take strangers in! Paul gently pushed the blade into the boy's fingertip, where a thick red teardrop immediately formed at the surface. He held the paper LED device up to the blood.
Ah, shit, it's not working, cursed Paul. Do you know how to work this thing?
You there, hey, hello! Lucy came out of her trance and realized Paul was addressing her.
Miss, how do you work this thing? I've not seen this model before, and I really don't want to guess how to treat your boy,
he pressed, holding out the pebble-shaped device for Lucy to examine. As she raised her arm to receive it, the world went black.